Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining me now is our good friend Dan Kangurski from Pittsburgh Hockey Now, who was in Toronto to witness the shortest Penguin season ever. And, of course, got a chance to experience life inside the bubble. Dan, I guess, you know, before we kind of get into the hockey part of it, all said and done, all told, what was life in the bubble like?
Well, I was never actually in the same players' bubble, right? I got to be in the hub, so I got to go to the arena and, you know, but the players were roped off with big NHL banners and you know, much fancier hotels than this guy's budget will ever afford, and, you know, fed a little better than the than the 3 a.m. Indian food that this guy was eating. But, you know, from what we've heard from some of the guys, you know, on their off days or their off hour when they took a walk, it became a little bit like youth hockey, you know, the tournaments where you go beat each other up on the ice and then you go to the snack bar together. It was, you know, kind of a collegial, unique experience that the Penguins got to experience for about 6 days.
So you got to experience it for 6 days.
Yeah, I was in quarantine longer than I got to cover hockey, yes.
Well, what I meant was, every time you went to the arena, did you have to get tested?
Well, they did the temperature check and they did the whole symptoms check, but no, they didn't actually make you do the nasal swab. So I was quite happy with that.
Okay. Well, that's good. At least you didn't have to go through all that stuff every single day. That would be really tough. You know, to me, when it comes to the Penguins, and this is where we can start. I know we heard from Rutherford today. You know, everybody went crazy about the decision to start Matt Murray. I know I've actually heard some people say if he'd have went the other way, they would have won the series. But Dan, I really feel like the Penguins had a lot of bigger problems than Matt Murray in that series. And even if they started Tristan Jarry from the start, they probably still would have lost.
I don't know. And it's not to disagree with you. It's to say I don't know. I think game one could have been different. Murray was serving a lot of pizzas, you know, big rebounds into the slot. And the Penguins' defense, Paul, was – you talk about bigger problems. The Penguins' defense was kind of bad against Montreal. So making them work extra hard was really, you know, part of that perfect storm that beat the Penguins. Obviously, like Rutherford said, their effort was pretty much garbage. But, yeah, maybe the Penguins win game one. And if you win a game where you have 96 shot attempts, the other team doesn't get that boost, maybe things are different. I guess that's what I'll concede. You know, I don't know if it would have been different, though.
About it. I mean, maybe, but Dan, they had bigger problems, didn't they? I mean, this looked like a team to me that, and I hate saying this, but they didn't seem all that engaged or really all that interested. It felt to me like the Canadians were playing harder, were hungrier, were, you know, they just played a better series.
Yeah, and you've been around. I mean, this reminded me a bit of the let's call it like the 2014 or 15 Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, when the other team starts beating them up, they would get chippy, but then they would quit. Or, you know, Shea Weber, I think, intimidated half of the Penguins' forwards. Those guys weren't going to the net, other than, you know, say a couple brave few like Patrick Hornquist. they weren't venturing into Shea Weber's neighborhood, and they weren't doing all of those things. And quite frankly, in game four, when, you know, they didn't get a goal, or it was too tough to get a goal, they did pack it in. It was astonishing, just astonishing to watch.
Watch the series, closely. There were a lot of times where the Canadians actually were the aggressor and sort of taking it to the Penguins. And also, I thought that there were a lot of times when they almost looked like the team that had more speed and more skill, which I know that's not true. But watching some of those games, you would not have known that the Canadians were the team that tanked at the trade deadline and tried to, you know, trade guys off and get prospects for them.
Yeah, just imagine if they had Ilya Kovalchuk on that team. It might have been a three-game series, right? Paul Byron tortured the Penguins. You know, as a scrappy third-line guy, he absolutely owned the Penguins' defenders and the Penguins' third line. He was all over the ice, and even Joel Armia used to play for Winnipeg with Brandon Tanev, kind of, you know, down there on the fourth line. He took some dumb penalties, but he too was just all over the puck. And when Montreal's grinders were dominating the Penguins' bottom two lines, that to me was maybe the biggest shock of the series. I really thought that Jared McCann and Hornquist and Marleau and the Penguins' fourth line were something to be reckoned with, and they kind of had their hats handed to them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it was just it was really tough to watch because I never, ever really got the impression that the Penguins were better, I never got the impression that the Penguins were the better team. There was very few that I really thought about when I watched it, that I said, boy, this 5-10-minute stretch, you know what? That tells me that the Penguins are better. I don't know that I saw that at all.
Well, I had a few moments. In game two, I thought the Penguins played well enough in a couple big stretches. They win that game. They get that 3-1 lead in game three. And I must admit, I think the Penguins had the same thought I did. Okay, good. They're going to get rid of Montreal. That was a scare, but moving on. And I think they relaxed. I mean, I know I could feel it. I felt, okay, a bit optimistic about getting to round one. And Montreal just pasted them from that moment forward.
That's the biggest thing about it. One thing that a lot of people talked about, Dan, was the power play. What did you see on the power play for the Penguins with all the players that they have? It seems like it should be better than it was.
How deep do you want to go for an hour of radio, right? We can talk about strategy. Really since Barry Trotz a couple of years ago with the Washington Capitals really popped the Penguins' power play bubble, which included Phil Kessel at that time, by the way, by really having kind of an attack with a point of the spear and taking away the top of the zone from the Penguins, but also taking away that cross ice circle to circle pass. And the freelancing Penguins, and that's a lot of what it comes down to, like to get the puck, take a look at what the defense is doing, and then make an adjustment or, use their skill to do something and something comes out of that. They create something. But by attacking the Penguins at the top of the zone, the Penguins don't have the time to think or to settle or to, and they didn't appear to have a lot of set plays or a lot of set routine on the power play. So they were kind of chasing themselves. Oh, send it over here. See what we can try. Oh, nope, not here, not here, not there. And it just became this snowball of confusion is not the right word, but maybe disorganization or lack of preparation might be better.
Well, again, With all the players they have, they should be better than they are. That's for sure. I mean, I don't get all of that. And, you know, it was really kind of frustrating to watch them because I thought there were a few of those power plays where they really didn't even put a lot of pressure on the other goalie and on Carey Price. And that should never happen, right?
Well, I mean, let's look at I got to watch Washington a couple times there in the hub. And Washington has such a regimented power play. But you also know what's coming. Like any good slasher movie, you know the villain's going to show up with a machete or whatever he's got. And you know Ovechkin's waiting in that circle with a one-timer just locked and loaded. The Penguins don't have a big shot like that. Malkin has a hard shot. But, you know, Crosby's not a guy who's going to whistle one-timers from the dot past you. And Jake Gensel is the Penguins' sniper, but he doesn't have one of those booming shots either. So the Penguins kind of rely on thinking or talent, but they don't have that organization like Washington does, where they've really got like just almost a set of protocols like a quarterback goes through. If this is covered, then do this. If that. And the Penguins just have a throw it on the wall and see if it sticks mentality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't think that, you're absolutely right, Dan. Well, coming up, we had heard from Jim Rutherford today, and that's really what it comes down to is he now has a long off season of really tough decisions to make, and we're going to get into some of those things. But he also has to kind of figure out what he wants the Penguins to be, and, you know, judging from today, I think we have a pretty good idea. But we'll do that after the update. We're going to come back with Dan. First, we got to get to a break, though. It's the Paul Zeiss Show on 93.7 The Fan. Dan, the Jim Rutherford talked today about a lot of different subjects, and it's kind of interesting to me just when you hear, you know, the post-mortem of these seasons and what guys talk about. You know, if you didn't know anything at all about the team and you just listened to that, Zoom call or whatever he did, you get a pretty clear picture that Justin Schultz has played his last game here, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, we did the breakdowns from Toronto. You know, the fan base was jumping ugly over Jack Johnson. But like as you and I talked before, you know, Johnson was the guy just left holding the bag after Schultz whiffed on a few guys or floated in the zone. I, Paul, big picture, I don't know what happened to Justin Schultz. I mean, he turned the corner like a madman in 2017. I mean, he put up 51 points and, you know, he really, with Ian Cole, was a, you know, becoming a rock-solid offensive defenseman. Since then, the last 3 years have just been, you know, what shoots and ladders. Get close to the finish line, then slide all the way back to the beginning. Missing guys, big slumps, injuries. And, yes, Rutherford kicked him, but, I mean, he's already out the door. Sources told us that, you know, that there hasn't been any conversations yet about extending Schultz or re-signing him, so... That was probably pretty telling and obvious, wasn't it?
Right. I mean, it was basically like, I'm going to make sure that I throw one guy under the bus, and it's not going to be the guy that we're probably stuck with because of his contract. You look as a whole, and, you know, there's a fundamental question about this team that needs to be asked, and that is did we finally see the door, the window, whatever, close on this sort of group of players, you know, built around Crosby, Malkin, and Letang? Have they made their final? I mean, was this sort of like the end? And if it is, where do you go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote RIP championship window. I don't want to walk that back in any way. I mean, of course, there's always a chance when you've got Sidney Crosby. I mean, that guy will be a Stanley Cup contender when he's 45 if he wants to play that long. But you just look at the results the last 2 years especially. They couldn't win a game against the Islanders, and they only won one game against the 24th best team in the NHL. That is not a championship contender. That's not a championship team. Maybe Rutherford catches lightning in a bottle and, you know, he makes a couple tweaks or changes and somebody just comes in and lights the place up. I mean, those things are theoretically possible, but likely, absolutely not. It's probably time to recognize that there won't be any parades going down Grant Street anytime soon.
That's the case, you know, and I know that Rutherford made it pretty clear he's not going to trade Letang or Malkin. Do you think that's the right approach? Because I've actually talked for the last couple of days here that maybe it's time for the Penguins to think about breaking up that little core group and seeing what you can get for a guy like Malkin or Letang and trying to sort of reload and maybe build a younger team around Crosby and give him one more shot at the title.
Well, I mean, what Florida had offered the Penguins for Malkin last summer was the time to do it. But that they've walked that back too far. They, you know, Crosby and Malkin decided they're going off together. You know, they're going to be Penguins for their career. I don't think Chris Letang is that safe, to be honest. I know Jim Rutherford said he's going to try to build around them today. I didn't hear him actually say the exact words Chris Letang, for one. For two, I kind of think that Letang might be in trouble perhaps towards the trade deadline of next season. He's at the top of the power play. He's their best defenseman. Maybe they need a more structured, rigid guy, and he would have a ton of value. If the Penguins don't trade a core guy, Paul, nothing's going to change, right? I mean, those three guys are the epicenter of the culture, the attitude, the identity of the team. If you need to change any of those things, you have to change something in the core, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the point. It's a thing of where I kind of felt like when they lost to the Capitals a few years ago, it could be the beginning of the end. Last year was sort of, you know, getting swept. You kind of felt like, okay, that's probably it, but maybe they got one more run in them. I don't know, Dan. I don't know how you watch what went on this year and even, you know, in this playoff and don't come to the conclusion that there needs to be some major changes.
Yeah, the thing that kind of I can't wrap my head around, having watched this team, and I enjoyed covering this team in November and December as much as I did, you know, covering them in the Stanley Cup runs, because there was just something gritty and fun about these underdogs and these guys playing out of their skates, and you know, Evgeny Malkin and Jake Guentzel lighting up the scoreboard. That there was a whole little engine that could thing about them that I just really loved to watch and cover. Crosby comes back, they lost all of that, you know, and then Malkin goes out of the lineup and they got some of it back. And for whatever reason, when the core is healthy, the rest of the team kind of takes a step back and says, okay, you guys got this. And the team just goes, you know, nowhere. If they can capture that determination they have to overcome adversity and try to have success with it instead of just overcoming the problems, we might have a different conversation, but I cannot for the life of me figure out where it goes when they get healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key is we know what the core is and what it kind of looks like around there. But, you know, to me, if you still have those three guys, you're still going to have to play and sort of, you know, build around what they're doing. And at that point, I don't know that you can add enough different pieces around them to significantly change the course of this team. Now, that being said, Dan, I mean, if you were Jim Rutherford, what do you think this team needs more than anything to take the next step?
Well, that's interesting because I think I know what it needs, but how to get it. They actually do need some some crazy young kids who don't care that they're playing with Sidney Crosby, you know, kind of like the Gensel, the Sherry, and the Rust crew that came along a few years ago that just were like, hey, we're in the NHL, great, and had to fight to stay there every night. There was a certain energy that they brought. And Rutherford, I think, touched on that today. You know, younger, hungrier, fresh legs. They could use a bit of that infusion of new blood. Guys who don't rely on the experience of winning a Stanley Cup and are thus a little bit desperate when they get down in the third period of an elimination game. They also could use a bit of rock-solid heart and leadership. You know, I'm trying to think of, you know, like a David Backes type who can play a little bit more hockey, a blood and guts guy to go along with kind of what Patrick Hornquist brings. Hornquist brings energy, but I never have the sense that he's a leader in the room. And maybe they need somebody to crack the whip again, a la Matt Cullen.
That's actually a pretty good. That's actually a pretty good point there. I was thinking when you look at this team that it is basically a team that's really not all. I think not all that balanced in a lot of ways, and they probably could use some different pieces just to kind of give Mike Sullivan some different kinds of parts. The one guy that it seemed to be the one that took all the criticism was Jack Johnson, but he's gonna be around, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be foolish to buy him out. That would be paying him almost $1 million a year salary cap money for 6 years. That doesn't make any sense. Johnson can be utilized on this team. I kind of get frustrated with people just going down the rabbit hole, assuming everything is his fault, and it becomes like a contest. Who can display the most over-the-top insanity to blame Jack Johnson? You know, maybe he's a sixth, seventh defenseman, where he in the press box some nights, in the lineup some nights, or maybe he becomes the seventh defenseman. Or with a good pairing, I thought he and John Marino actually were quite good in the first half of the season, and the numbers bore that out. So Johnson has some values. Also, you know, Mike Sullivan's favorite penalty killer to throw out there, to block shots and to make it tough on the opponents. They don't have anybody else who really does it quite like he does in the zone. So, I mean, blame or scream about Jack Johnson all people want. There are values to having him around. Having said that, let me give you a little bit of a, you know, what might happen this offseason, Paul. Don't be entirely surprised if the Penguins do trade Jack Johnson and give up an asset to send him along to save that $3 million.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we got one more segment left. Let's get to a break. We'll be back with Dan Kangurski. It's the Paul Zeiss Show on 93.7 The Fan. We're talking with Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now on the Holland Capitas fan hotline. And, of course, Dan, you know, when you look at this roster, we talked about maybe some of the guys that they've got to make decisions on. Of course, the big one is Matt Murray. And so, in your mind, what do you think that is going to take place there?
Well, I think it's Tristan Jarry's net. I think Murray is traded. Maybe he's the asset they attach Jack Johnson to. I don't want to say that that's a strong possibility, but I think it's out there in the universe, floating around anyway. So, yeah, there's a few teams that need goalies, including one team that has a new GM who used to be a Penguins assistant GM.
And I think that you, if I'm not mistaken, wrote something about some of there's some rumors out there about different places for Murray to go. Why don't you elaborate on some of that? I know I saw some of it on Twitter.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, we'd kind of been following Colorado, who checked in with the Penguins. We had from, you know, two different sources of very different geographic locations who told us that. And okay, but it that to me doesn't seem to make sense right now. I really do think you know, there's a couple teams. You look at Edmonton, who has Stanley Cup aspirations. You look at Minnesota. Bill Guerin was flat out yesterday when he asked, you know, what does your team need? He's like, well, our goaltending needs to improve. So Minnesota is probably on that short list for a goaltender too. And it becomes, you know, who can afford what Murray might make? Arbitration, you know, he's going to get an arbitration award this year if he doesn't sign a contract. He's not going to make $3 million. He's going to get starters money. So a team has to be willing to pay that and also give the Penguins something in return, too, to buy him. I like Edmonton and Minnesota right now.
Okay, so you're basically saying that Matt Murray has played his last game with the Penguins.
If I were a betting man, that's where I'd put most of my chips.
Well, you know, wasn't that many years ago that they had to make a decision on who was going to be their goalie of the future, and it was Murray that won that sweepstakes, and at that point he was like 21, 22 years old. And we all assumed he'd be playing goalie till about, you know, until he was like 35 or something. Like he would be the Penguins goalie for the next, you know, 10, 12 years. And here we are, and he already is not going to be the goalie.
Yeah, the Penguins' original long-term plan would have worked spectacularly. I mean, the plan was for Fleury to kind of play to his mid to later 30s and Tristan Jarry to eventually, you know, supplant him. Well, I mean, look, Fleury is kind of falling in Vegas. He's getting to that age now where he's maybe slipping a little bit, or at least having a bad run here lately. So Robin Lehner is going to start game one tonight for Vegas. And Tristan Jarry is coming into his own at the exact same time. That plan would have worked very well, but Murray was just spectacular in the minors. He was unbeatable, and you know, when a guy wins a couple Stanley Cups for you, I would have kept Marc-Andre Fleury, and I was vocal about it a few years ago. But, you know, keeping Matt Murray had a lot of merit, but he never – what happened to Murray, Paul, was he didn't adjust to being solved. The shooters began to figure out his weak spots, and, you know, his game began to evolve a little bit, and all of those things changed him. And he's not been the same brick wall that he was back in 17.
Well, you have, you know, Murray gone. I think we all think Justin Schultz is gone. We also, Bukestad is probably gone. Who else, Dan, do you think could have played their last game for the Penguins?
Well, those are the easy ones, right? Beyond that, you start talking really difficult decisions. Or you know, you start trading for value. You have to add, you know, I keep getting a lot of stuff on Twitter about Patrick Hornquist. I mean, he does make $5.3 million. If a team really wanted Hornquist, I would say no, but Jim Rutherford might see a way to upgrade the right-wing position by trading Hornquist, reinvesting the money. That would be the only way that trade would make sense. You know, Brian Rust makes a good bit of money. You know, he also scored 27 goals this year. Jared McCann kind of seems like he's trapped in that 35-point range. You'd like more from a third-line center, or you'd like a lot more offense. So they have to make a decision on his future, if they can put him to wing and find a center, or, you know, if you keep a guy like that just for versatility. And, you know, that's the thing with the Penguins. If you don't trade one of the core members like we talked about, there's just not a lot of meat on the bone to go make changes.
Yeah. I mean, without making one of those big splash moves and all that other stuff, you're right. Now, we've heard, you know, different things about the coaching staff. It sounds like Mike Sullivan's going to survive, but there might be a few guys that are moved on from or changed out. I mean, what are your thoughts on the coaching staff?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Right before we hopped on the air, I did publish a little bit of an inside story on PittsburghHockeyNow.com. Yes, we've been told to expect some coaching changes behind the bench. Not Mike Sullivan. He's safe for now. But expect, you know, an assistant coach or two to not be there next year. I'm not firm on the details, so I don't want to say too much. Obviously, the power play was not very good, and Mark Recchi probably wears that. Jacques Martin is also 67 years old, and, you know, does he want to keep going through this as an assistant coach? So, you know, yeah, we've been told to expect some change behind the bench.
Okay. Well, I mean, you said Mike Sullivan's safe for now. I guess the question would be, you know, if they get off to a slow start next year, would he be less safe, I guess, is the question.
You picked up on that little hedge, did you?
Yes.
Yes, I believe by middle of next year, if the Penguins are not showing improvement, if they're not showing life, you know, if they're not showing that snap or the verve that they need to show to become a great team again, or at least a very good team worthy of a Stanley Cup, then I believe Sullivan might be on the hot seat. It's not yet. It's not now. You know, he gets the coach for his job next year. But I believe it could be a very pivotal year.
Yeah, and I mean, that's life as in the NHL. I actually think that would be fair. I know a lot of people, you know, think there are some people that think because he won the two cups, he should have a lifetime contract. But it's not how it works. I think that, you know, the last three playoffs have not gone really well for the Penguins. And, you know, the number that probably is the most damning for him, Dan, is 1-9 in your last 10 playoff games. I mean, next year, if they were to, you know, go out and get swept again in four games, I don't know how you get back. I don't know how you come back from 1-13 stretch in the playoffs.
Well, no. I mean, you look at the two guys prior to Sullivan who won Stanley Cups, Daryl Sutter and Joel Quenneville. Quenneville lasted a few years after his last Stanley Cup, you know, or I guess 3.5 years, a couple first round playoff flameouts, including a sweep. And, you know, he really had a crap team in Chicago, but they moved him on and he's now in Florida. You know, Daryl Sutter in LA lasted a couple years after his last cup before they sort of moved him along. It's a lot of hockey and it's a lot of intense hockey. And maybe that burns up a coach a little faster, as, you know, he earns the credibility, but also, you know, burns up that intensity or that buy-in a little faster too. So, Sullivan would be reaching that age of maturity next season that his predecessors were moved along.
Dan, I appreciate you spending some time and breaking it down. He's Dan Kongurski, Pittsburgh Hockey Now. You can find all of his stuff at Pittsburgh Hockey Now. I'm going to assume that even though you're not in Toronto, you'll still be following and writing about the playoffs and all of the off-season stuff with the Penguins, right?
I've got the game on in front of me here, the 5 overtime Columbus Tampa Bay game, yeah.
All right, Dan. Thank you, man.
Have fun, Paul.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.